He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Julian Council producing. This is Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live in the Jack Daniels Barrel House inside Bridgestone Arena because, believe it or not, preseason hockey is here. A doubleheader today for the Preds, which you can hear later on these very airwaves starting at 3 o'clock. Coverage starts at 3 o'clock this afternoon. Doubleheader against the Panthers. And also a big announcement coming for the Preds later this afternoon as they will announce captains. So we will keep you updated and cover all of that. But before we get there, we've been having a heck of a conversation this morning about Butch Jones and what will make this fan base happy. Want to get a little national perspective. You know, it's one of our favorite things to do is get some of our favorite national guys on from ESPN College Football. Ivan Maisel joins us. And Ivan, from a national perspective, should Butch Jones be worried about job security with Tennessee?
Yeah, I think that's fair. I think it's not so much the national perspective. It just reflects the way that Tennessee people feel. I mean, on the one hand, he's been more successful than any coach there since Phil Fulmer. But on the other hand, the disappointments have been so great and so painful that, you know, sometimes people just, you know, that winning more is not enough. You got to win it all.
Is there anything he can do let me rephrase this. Is there something that you learned, and you can actually talk about Jim McElwain or Butch Jones in this game. Is there something that we learned definitively about either one of those two head coaches in that performance on Saturday?
I can't imagine there's anything I learned from that performance. That was 59 minutes of the worst game I've ever watched. But I'm not sure the last minute redeemed it, you know, but I wouldn't take anything from Saturday. You know, I think this season is certainly still redeemable. You know, if Tennessee finishes, you know, 9-3, what are people going to complain about? I mean, you know, this team's got room for improvement. They feel like they're so close. You know, if they stay healthy, which they couldn't do last year, you know, and, you know, it's not far off. It doesn't feel far off. It just, that was just a spectacular, just a spectacularly bad finish. And, you know, that sort of thing can be fixed.
We're talking to ESPN's Ivan Maisel. And with that being said, you mentioned 9-3. I can't decide if this team feels closer to 9-3 or 6-6 at this point. When you look at the Vols and try and figure out where they stand in the power structure of the East, where do they lie to you right now?
Well, I don't know how you can say anything with any confidence about anything, you know, any team in the East. You know, with the possible exception of picking Missouri 7th, you know, the best defense looks like it's in Nashville. Georgia's defense looks really good. I don't know how, you know, I don't know what you make of South Carolina and Kentucky. That game surprised me Saturday, but you know, I don't know what it means. You know, the problem it being in week four is, you know, we've played three games, so we have 100% of what we know, but it's only, you know, 25% of what we're going to know, and it's just kind of hard to figure out, especially in this division.
You mentioned, and I think that speaks a lot to the Vanderbilt win over Kansas State. There are many people, myself included, that thought K-State could be a pretty good 9 or 10 win team in the Big 12 this year. They didn't look like that, but is that more about Vanderbilt's defense? You just said could be the best in the SEC. Is that more about Vanderbilt and what Derek Mason is doing? Is that more about Kansas State maybe being not as good as we thought? It's the same question every single week, Ivan. It's, hey, which one is it, right?
Well, yeah, and I think we'll find out about Vanderbilt Saturday. You know, that will be a terrific test. And I don't, do I expect Vanderbilt to beat Alabama? No, but I think there's every chance that, you know, Derek Mason is a really, in addition to being a good coach, he's a really smart, strategic defensive coach. So they're going to try to, you know, shorten the game against Alabama and force Jalen Hurts to do things he doesn't want to do. And you know, I think they can at least keep it interesting for a while. I don't expect them to be able to move the ball very well against Alabama, because Alabama's defense is pretty good too.
I mean, in that sense, do you feel like maybe we're underappreciating what Derek Mason is doing and how good Vandy is this year?
Well, I mean, that's by definition coaching Vanderbilt, isn't it? I mean, you know, of course we're underappreciating it. And, you know, I give a lot of credit to Derek, because a lot of time first-year head coaches try something and it doesn't work and they can't get out of the spiral. They start spiraling downward. But he figured out the first year he needed to run the defense. And once he did it, you know, which was how he made his bones in this business, he was able to you know, coach the defense the way he knows how and still be a head coach. And that's just a terrific tribute to him.
Ivan, you look around college football, and I think this happened for me watching the NFL as well, but I feel like there's a lot of sloppy football going on. I don't know if there's a lot of great teams. You know, like Clemson looks really good, and Alabama's obviously great. Maybe Penn State's a complete team, but USC struggles. And, I mean, there's teams all across the top 10 that have struggled. I don't know. Is it down? Is it parity? Is it just bad coaching? Like, what is – is there a problem with college football? I mean, obviously the entertainment value is great. What do you see across the country in college football?
That's an interesting question. I think part of it may have to do with changes in August practice, you know, where there's less contact. I think part of it may have to do with young players playing more than they used to. I think it's probably adjusting to the more stringent, people are a lot more wary about contact than they used to be. And we're used to seeing sloppy tackling in week one or two. It's lasted a little longer this year, but it's going to be interesting to see how long it lasts and whether anybody feels like there's something they can do about it. I mean, I think the rules toward less contact in practice are here to stay. Coaches are just going to have to adjust.
You guys can obviously check him out on ESPN.com. Also, check out this week's College Football Campus Conversations podcast. He's part of that out there. Follow him on Twitter at Ivan_Mazel. Ivan, we appreciate your time. Thanks for coming on with us, man.
Thanks for having me.
Great stuff from Ivan. And it's interesting because he said at 9-3, what can Vols fans complain about? Also said we're underappreciating Vandy by nature, because that's what happens when you coach at Vandy.
Right.
Two statements that make a ton of sense that I absolutely agree with. I just don't know how you turn any of those things around. I don't know how you stop underappreciating Vandy, and I don't know how you stop the negative flow that seems to come around Butch. That's the difficulty of both of those situations.
Yeah, and I mean, winning cures everything. We talk about it all the time in every sport, every coach, every team, every fan base. You win enough, you get respect, right? If you, oh, nobody respects us. If you win a lot, you quiet doubters. If you win a lot, you shut people up. And so, I mean, both winning is obviously the cure to everything. But I'm getting people on Twitter that are asking about Bobby Petrino and Les Miles and these guys coaching at Tennessee, and I'm like, you guys have lost your minds. Like, if you think these guys are going to be better than Butch, Bob Stoops and Chip Kelly, if you're telling me one of those two guys is an option at Tennessee, then I'm listening to you. I would take both of those guys over Butch Jones in a heartbeat without blinking. But there's no – show me the guy out there that's going to beat Nick Saban out routinely. Show me the guy out there that's going to routinely win the SEC East every single year, which isn't what Tennessee has done historically. They've won the East every 5 years. That's their ratio. That's what they are. So – show me a guy that can win it once every 5 years, and I'll go hire him right now. But right now, Butch looks capable of that. He just hasn't done it yet. And he may never do it. And I think we'll learn, much to the point about Derek Mason and Vanderbilt, same thing. If they come out of this stretch 2-2 and they beat Florida or Georgia, which is very much a possibility, let's sort of throw the Alabama game out and call it house money. If they go 2-2 during that stretch, that's an unbelievable accomplishment for Vanderbilt and Derek Mason. People will sit up in their chairs and pay attention to Vanderbilt. But then they got to finish the deal. They can't then choke against South Carolina and Kentucky and Tennessee. Like, they have to finish the job, and it's all about where you're at the end of the season.
I mean, you could sit in the world of 2-2. I'm going straight for 3-1, buddy.
Oh,
3-1.
Oh,
you know the
Bobo.
We're going 3-1.
Bobo status.
I'm full on Bobo. Like, I'm I'm all in on it. I'm just going to start wearing like a you know, the matte black helmet to work, just sitting doing the show with the helmet on. Vandy going to be sitting at 6-1, and none of us are going to know what to do. That's my
all right. You have gone from lifelong diehard to full on Bobo.
Full on no local radio Bobo. I have crossed that bridge. Speaking of bridges that are being crossed, we talked to Floyd Reese earlier. I want to switch gears and get over to the Titans, cross over to the other side of the river. And when you look at the Titans, you asked Floyd Reese an important question that I think we haven't had enough time to talk about yet. And it's a real question, and it's about Marcus Mariota. Is there a problem at the quarterback position? I know it sounds drastic to say. We'll explain what we mean. Just stick with us. We'll explain that next. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. This is Braden and Fitz on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We are live at the Jack Daniel's Barrel House, Bridgestone Arena. Hockey in the air. There's a particular smell to the arena that I love. Like, I always loved popcorn, for example, when you play arenas. Like,
sweaty gloves?
Yeah, there's like a hockey smell to the arena that I like better than the concert smell.
For those of us who ever played hockey growing up or in, you know, just at any point during your life, even if you're an adult playing in a men's league or whatever, the smell of a used hockey glove, not a pretty thing.
No, the smell of like the hockey, like when the first time we went into like the practice area and we're just standing by the ice, I was like, "Ooh, that's a
ripe is a good word that is for the smell of hockey equipment after being used for many years, especially when you're like a 13-year-old and you haven't learned about deodorant yet."
Mm-hmm. Well,
here's a lesson. Oh, excuse me. Take over, Fitz. I'm dying.
don't die. This speaking of ripe, some might say so far that the season
had a cashew in my throat. Sorry about that.
Some might say so far that the season for Marcus Mariota has not necessarily been what some would hope. And I know that sounds like it's against the unwritten rules of Nashville to say anything negative about Marcus Mariota because, let's face it, he's a franchise quarterback, and he's just so darn likable. Like, I feel
and
like
very handsome.
I feel like if there's anybody, on any professional athlete in Nashville that would be just incredibly welcoming to just a hug when he comes in, I feel like it'd be like,
well, I don't know.
Me and Marcus, we'd hug.
I don't know.
Man, we would.
No, like, LaJuan 100%. Is like a big old bear hug kind of guy.
No.
Ben Jones is huggable. Super bear hug guy. Like, that guy, you know you can bear hug him.
But Marcus looks like
Marcus is like, oh, you put a wrinkle in my suit.
No, I feel like Marcus would be a little resistant until I was like, man, I could really use a hug. And they'd be like, okay, man.
Right,
and,
like, you'd be looking at, okay,
yeah,
he's a consummate leader.
Okay. He's like, if you need a hug, we're going to do that. So I know it's against every rule to say anything negative about Marcus Mariota, but let's face it. Mm-hmm. We are looking at a situation where he came off a Jags game where he completed about 55% of his passes, 215 yards, one touchdown, one interception, and a quarterback rating of 78. And so I looked at that, and just I know it's a very small body of work. We only have two games so far. But Marcus Mariota right now, based on quarterback rating, which is a scale, not everybody loves it, but it's at least a scale. According to quarterback rating, number 24 in the NFL after 2 weeks, Mike Glennon in Chicago has a higher quarterback rating, higher completion percentage for more yards. So I'm looking at it saying, my God, is there a problem? And part of it is identity of this football team. But I think part of it is what Floyd Reese mentioned before, that there's a little bit of caution for Mariota still as he learns what he wants to do with every one of these weapons and how he can trust them all. I don't think it's a give. The souffle is not done. It's still baking.
Okay. The souffle thing, the reference, since I've never baked one of those.
Very difficult.
Does it like rise? Yeah, like it's hard, right? Like it rises and like you got to get all the, like if you don't get the ingredients, it just crumbles into like nothing. Like it's awful, right? I think there is, like, for me, I literally have zero concerns about Marcus Mariota. There's literally not one thing that I've seen from him in 2 years and two games, with the exception of the injury issue, which we bring up all the time. If he finishes, you know, Matt Stafford had an injury issue sort of tag early in his career because he missed a big chunk of a season and has now played almost all the time since then. You can sort of shake that with how you play the game. But if you look at what a franchise quarterback is supposed to be, like define franchise quarterback and make a checklist, right, of what you want out of a franchise quarterback. Marcus Mariota not only it checks every box except for one so far, which is playoff success. Playoff success would be the one box he hasn't checked yet. He's got to prove that he is a playoff-caliber quarterback that can win games in playoff situations. But otherwise, you go down the list. Arm talent, athletic ability, class, leadership in the community, leadership in the huddle, poise, maturity. He's a likable guy. I mean, he's got statistical production so far. I mean, last season's statistics were very, very good, very efficient. He's the best quarterback in the red zone, period, in the entire NFL right now as of protecting the football and delivering points. I mean, you go down the list of all the things you want out of a franchise quarterback, and he's far and away checks every box on the list, with the only exception so far, the last one, and sometimes the most important one, playoff success. He has to have playoff success. But outside of that, I don't know what it is Marcus Mariota can show us or do that indicates that he's not that answer or that guy at all those positions and checks all those boxes. I mean, look at Kirk Cousins, for example, because we've had this discussion, like who would you take, Mariota or Kirk Cousins? I would take Marcus Mariota in a heartbeat, but it's not that he's significantly more talented than Kirk Cousins. It's that I think if you're looking at the intangibles and sort of the value to a franchise outside of the field, I think that's where Marcus Mariota beats Kirk Cousins. He's a little bit more likable. He's a little bit more open to the community. He's a little bit more of a poised leader. There's, you know what I mean? Like, there's just this little extra thing with Mariota that makes him this perfect franchise quarterback. He's got to deliver his team a playoff berth, and he's got to win those games in the playoff to ultimately seal the deal.
So we'll take I want to go back to specifically the answer what we haven't seen. I don't know that there's anything necessarily we haven't seen. I just think that it's interesting to me. We'll go back to quarterback rating as a scale, and it's a metric not many of us love. It's not perfect. It's not flawless. But the top three quarterbacks right now in quarterback rating, Sam Bradford, Alex Smith, Derek Carr, have all statistically had very good years so far. After that, Matthew Stafford, Matt Ryan. So you're talking about, while it's just a metric, it's a metric that is showing us some guys that are playing particularly well. And even a guy that plays in a non-traditional form, Trevor Siemian, finds himself amongst quarterbacks that have actually thrown any real passes, finds himself at number six. So a non-traditional, not a slinger, not a gunslinger, finds himself at number six. So I say that because, again, that's the metric where Marcus Mariota finds himself currently ranked number 24 in completion percentage right now, ranked number 27 in average per attempt, ranked number 20. So he's not throwing the ball as far, and he's not completing as many as most other quarterbacks. Yards per game, 15th. First down conversion percentage, 23rd. He's only been sacked twice. I say all of that to say right now, when you look at the stats that quarterbacks are judged by, he's not in the top half in any of them. And that's surprising to me after two games. And I know that the Jaguars.
But they played a great defense in the Oakland Raiders.
No, they played a.
It's a great defense.
They played a junk defense in the Raiders, and they played a good defense in Jacksonville. But they're going to play an even better defense against Seattle. And I'm not saying this is all on Mariota's shoulders, but I think that it is an indication that something offensively is not clicking.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't go there. I need to see 8, 9, 10 games before I can say.
Well, but we don't get that long. I mean, in a
right, we react day to day. I mean, I get that.
I mean, the fact is that there were ESPN yesterday did metrics and conversation about the fact that very Raiders team that we talked about, their offense is not playing particularly well, and they scored 42 points against the Jets after they scored 26 points here.
Well, and that's that's my problem is that you know,
all you can do is look at what the opportunities, plays made, and what's been done. And that's where I look at it and say, if you're not throwing the ball far and you're not completing as many and your yards per game are down, that's an indication of something after two games, isn't it?
And I can't say yes to that. Two games is not a body enough of work to me to eliminate the first 28 games that I've seen in his career and what he is. And frankly, with one of those games being a 37 point, you know, outburst where you dominated another team. Basically, it was 37-3 or 37-9. I mean, they scored late to make it look interesting, but essentially, your offense was. Now, there was a couple turnovers, but basically, your offense dominated the second half of an NFL football game on the road in a key game that you know you had to win, where you got smoked last year in that situation. And it's hard for me to walk away from that going, yeah, I don't know about Marcus. Like, I don't.
You know, I'm not saying I don't know about Marcus.
But give me
I'm
Seattle
making,
and Houston.
I'm not. Well, my God, if the numbers aren't good against the Raiders and Jags, they shouldn't get any better.
Well,
against
but
Seattle
that's what I'm saying. Like, let me see him the next 2 weeks, and if we've got a four weeks is still only a quarter of your season, and 4 weeks to me is still not enough time because you just mentioned some of the names. Does anyone in their right mind believe, except for Julian, that Alex Smith and Trevor Siemian are the best two quarterbacks in the NFL?
Yesterday on NFL Live yesterday, their argument was that Alex Smith is the MVP in the National Football League after 2 weeks.
And that's great, and that's fine, and they need to fill content 2 weeks into the season.
No, that's not about that. That's about based on the body of work of what we have 2 weeks in.
I agree, that wasn't what I said. What I said is Alex Smith or Trevor Siemian the two best quarterbacks in the NFL?
Yes.
And no one in their right mind are saying yes, except for Julian, who loves Alex Smith. And we all love Alex Smith.
I'm a big Trevor Siemian fan, too, by the way.
And you weren't on the show last year, but I was big on Trevor Siemian to start the year last year. He didn't play as well as I would have hoped, but I don't think he's going to be a star like Aqib Talib is telling people.
The difference is this year, he has a running game.
Last year. Let's back up a little bit. Does anyone believe rationally that Alex Smith and Trevor Siemian are the best two quarterbacks in the NFL? And no one says yes to that question.
I haven't been rational since Panama City, Florida in 2008.
But to answer your general question about a career versus a specific question about this particular season. Just this season, I'm not 100% sure Alex Smith isn't going to have the best quarterback season in the NFL. With the weapons that he has, I'm not sure he's not going to have the best statistical season in the NFL.
Okay, I would take that bet in a heartbeat.
Okay, figure out what you want to bet.
Aaron Rodgers, Tom Brady, Drew Brees. You go down the list. Ben Roethlisberger, the best offensive weapons in all of football. I mean, you go down the list. And what's going to happen is this is going to come across as like bashing Alex Smith. It's not. I actually enjoy Alex Smith's style of play. But I think my point is that we can't judge the season based on two games, and you can't judge a career based on one season. And so you've got to kind of cover it all together in sort of a package deal and look at it. And I'm just not worried about Mariota. Now, if we get to week 10 and he's still one of the worst quarterbacks in the NFL, then we need to start having that conversation.
So this conversation to me isn't really about necessarily just about Marcus. This is the same conversation we were having after week one. And we'll continue it on the other side because part of it is about what we expect from this offense. We were willing after 1 week to question the amount the football was being run. I'm willing after 2 weeks to question if Mariota is getting the opportunity to do everything he needs to do. Because if he is getting that opportunity, why do the numbers look the way they look? We'll answer that question on the other side. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Braden and Fitz, ESPN, 102.5 The Game. Coming at you live from the Jack Daniels Burrow House inside Bridgestone Arena.
Never gets old.
615-737-1025 to hang out with us. 615-737-1025. We need to welcome Kevin Kyle to the official Daniels Barrel House team.
His name is not Kyle.
When nobody else was here, I'm pretty sure he made himself welcome to the entire grilled cheese stand. So he's covered in butter.
Which, by the way, is an awesome place to get a bite to eat when you're at a Predators game or event in the Bridgestone Arena.
Which you can come to today for the hockey doubleheader. Coverage will start here at 3:00. They've got a preseason doubleheader happening this afternoon and tonight. You can hear all the action right here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Also, big announcement coming in just a few hours. The Preds are going to be making some captain announcements, so everybody's excited for that. So let me be clear: I'm not saying that there's a problem with Marcus Mariota, but I am saying, and I want to make a definitive statement that everybody understands about franchise quarterbacks, because I believe Marcus is a franchise quarterback, and I believe in the process of this, what we're going to find out is that my franchise quarterback doesn't have to look like your franchise quarterback. Like, there's a point where being a franchise quarterback can be a very different thing depending on the team you're with and the fan base you're with. All I'm saying is that after one game, we looked at it and said, oh, my God, run the football. I'm looking at it after two games and saying, oh, my God, find Marcus rhythm. Like, there's a point where
– how much of that is the receiving core?
I think that's a lot of it. And I think that that's when there comes a point where – that's where the Corey Davis injury, for example, and missed time in preseason becomes
three rookies in your top seven pass catchers.
This all becomes part of it, and it's Floyd Reese was on with us in the 6:30 hour, GM Floyd Reese, and he talked a little bit about the problems, frankly, with Janu Smith a couple of times in the game, and he said it looked like Marcus may have lost a little confidence and in Janu, not in himself, but in Janu. You've got to earn those things, and those things have to be worked out. So I think that that's a big part of why it's a slow start. 1-1 masks many of the things. But I believe that if this was an 0-2 team, we'd be coming in with a, oh, my God, he only completed 55% of his passes, didn't have a particularly lights-out game. What's wrong with Marcus? I mean, these are all conversations you have when your team loses. I don't think that there's a long-term problem with Marcus. I think that there is a short-term. They need to find plays that they have a solid, secure rhythm with so that he can sort of be Marcus, which helps the run game as well.
Yeah, and I agree with all of that. And obviously, early in the season last year, there were some struggles with turnovers, and we had questions about Marcus, and then he fixed those problems. And the only problem I really have is the injury, the injury issue. You got to finish a season healthy, 16 games. Let's see it. And buy into that. I think that's important because he's had injury issues in his career and going all the way back to Oregon. But what I think is interesting is your line about, you know, my franchise quarterback doesn't have to look like yours. They come in many different shapes, sizes, and styles. But the common threads, there are common threads that run through all of them, which is, A, you have to be, in a modern era of NFL football, you got to be statistically efficient. You've got to be able to put up numbers, put up points. Number two, winning games. You got to win games. And then there's this whole other aspect of your franchise quarterback that involves personality, leadership, poise, work ethic, you know, community relationship, all that kind of stuff. And does Matt Stafford's relationship with the Detroit fans the same as Marcus Mariota? No, they're different. Does Tom Brady have the same leadership style that Aaron Rodgers has? No, they're obviously wildly different. If you've read anything about Aaron Rodgers lately, you know that it's very different. So all these guys are very, very different, and even their playing styles are very different. Matt Stafford has a huge arm, and another Alex Smith doesn't have a huge arm, but is great in that. You know, like there's so many different ways a franchise quarterback can look, but there are these common threads that run between all of them. And Marcus has every single thing there. He's got every single piece of the puzzle, and I don't think you could ask for a better ambassador. We talk about Derek Mason, right, being a great ambassador for Vanderbilt football and for the city of Nashville. I think Marcus Mariota is a tremendous ambassador to the city of Nashville for the Tennessee Titans. I think he's a great individual, and what he has to deliver, the only thing he doesn't have on his resume, is playoffs. Get to the playoffs and win games in the playoffs. If he does that, then none of this stuff is, you know, we don't look at QBR anymore. We don't look at, you know, any of his other, like, it's all about winning games. And if you get to the playoffs, that's the only thing he doesn't have on his resume yet, is getting to the playoffs. And frankly, he tied for a division lead last year. And only his second season as a starter, coming off a 2-14 team that changed its coaching staff and general manager. I mean, just step back from that and realize what he accomplished last year. So I think he's fine. I'm not worried about it. If we talk again in week 8 or 9 and you're asking me the same question, Fitz, then I'm getting concerned and I'm starting to ask questions about all this.
But if you go back to last year, in the last 5 games total, he has 2 touchdown passes. And that's you're
not
talking
good.
About the last 3 games of last year that he played and the first 2 games this year. Like that's... that's concerning to me. As much as we talk about getting the running game going, there also has to be some level of making sure that Mariota is getting going, that he's getting what he needs in this process so that he can be the passer that he wants to be. His completion percentage was way down in the back half of the season last year compared to the front half of the season. All things that we sort of looked at and said, hey, no problem. And you and I talked about stats about a month ago that you could take – the Titans season last year, and you could break it into of the 15 games he played in, there were 8 games that were fantastic, and there were 7 games that had different question marks in it. So you could almost break it down to half and half. So when you see a slow start come in to this season statistically, that's part of what concerns me when I look at it. Mike in Nashville chiming in, as anybody can do, at 615-737-1025. Mike, thanks for chiming in on the show. Thanks. What do you got, man?
I was going to say is if you actually look at the Titans and you watched any of the preseason games, which I know a lot of people say you can't feed much into the preseason, they were already having issues with the running game at that point. You know, missing a block here and there, continuity between the line. Of course, you know, it's hard to get when, you know, you're getting such limited reps, but there were also cracks that were shown at that point. So it's not amazing to me to see that their running game is struggling at this point. And not doing as well, you know, as people would thought it would do. And one thing I also would point out, too, is in the passing game, a lot of people talk about what's wrong with Marcus and things like that. The main thing that needs to happen in the passing game, get the ball to Delanie Walker. When you get him 5 receptions or more in the game, they're 6-3 over the last couple seasons. Get him the ball. Everything else will work itself out. I think Jonah Smith will be fine. I definitely think he'll be fine. And, you know, I think Marcus will be fine as well. This conversation kind of reminds me of the same conversation when Steve McNair was going through his transition to being the franchise quarterback and people having questions and doubts as well. But I think Mariota will be fine. I think the Titans need to find that running game, and the running game will help solve a lot of things in that offense.
Thanks for the call, Mike. I appreciate it.
I think they did that against Jacksonville,
yeah.
Right?
And I don't disagree that I think he's going to be just fine. I just think that there's a point where the coaches need to identify what they can do to get him in rhythm and get him comfortable quickly. That's what stands out to me, because ultimately, how many times have we both said on this show, Marcus Mariota is an epic, huge franchise quarterback. And I think that people need to understand that he's an epic franchise quarterback that's not statistically going to be competing in many categories with the Aaron Rodgers of the world, the Tom Brady's, the Derek Carr's of the world,
because Drew Brees.
It's a much different system that he runs, and it's a much different thing that's going to be asked of him. But that doesn't make him any less of a $25 million man.
And I think that's the key, is how many – just ask yourself how many plays over the course of a game, when you watch, you go, what are you doing, Marcus? You know, like, right. You know how I'm saying? Like, when you watch Quentin Dormady, you're saying that every two dropbacks. When you watch Marcus Mariota, it happens maybe once a game. Maybe. Like, I just don't remember, even in the last two games, just this year, where, to your point about statistically maybe slower, I still don't remember moments where I'm going, God, what are you – what a bonehead mistake. Like, I just – you don't see that from him ever. And he's so careful with the football that maybe the efficiency drops, but maybe it's because he's throwing the ball out of bounds when he doesn't have anything, because he is so good at that. He doesn't force the football into turnover-prone situations. And I love that out of a franchise quarterback.
Well, Mike just mentioned preseason. We're at Bridgestone Arena because it's time for preseason hockey. We want to give you, obviously, some things you can look for to today and tonight as the doubleheader is here upon us. Don't forget, guys, join 102.5 The Game for the Light the Night Walk at Nissan Stadium on Friday, October 20th. You can be the difference in saving a life by being a part of the 2017 Light the Night Walk. For more details, to be a part of the event, or to contribute to the 102.5 team, visit thegamenashville.com. Do it now. When we come back, what are you looking for? We got a preseason doubleheader. We got two hockey games in one day live from the Jack Daniels Barrel House. We'll give you some thoughts on what to look for tonight. Next up on Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Said it's all right.
He's Braden Gall. I'm Jason Fitz. Braden and Fitz live at the Jack Daniel Barrel's House. Jack Daniel's Barrel House.
There we go.
Well, that's what happens when you put me around this much Jack this early in the morning.
Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Inside Bridgestone Arena. There's a little less Jack than there was 3 hours ago. But at the same time, our fearless. What is Julian? And Julian's our traffic cop. Our producer. That's what
fearless producer.
And producer extraordinaire Julian Council is coming at you live from the Game Nashville Studios, presented by Wholesale Inc. of Mount Juliet. Julian, we miss your beautiful smile today. So if anyone wants to send Julian a GIF of a smile on Twitter at Julian Council, you should do that, because I'm sure he misses.
Can we just
smiles.
Call it a GIF from now on?
We can, but then you're committing yourself to a lifetime of being corrected for saying GIF, and then
but
having
that sounds
to tell
like,
people
but that sounds like fun though.
That you're right. No, that's awesome.
I like correcting people.
That is also fair. So we are down here because preseason hockey is getting underway today. And it's interesting, we were just talking about this at the break. There's a doubleheader today. You can hear all the action starting right here at 3 p.m. on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And what stands out is sort of we got our preseason fix in some ways without the luxury of the result not counting, because there were so many young guys in the process of the Stanley Cup playoff run and the final run that came up from Milwaukee that were relied upon. It really felt like the questions we would be asking ourselves today about Freddie Gaudreau or Pontus Aubrey, you know, the young guys, some of those questions, most of those questions were answered with, you know, live fire in games that mattered more than any games in franchise history. So it feels like the roster's a little more set today because of the Stanley Cup playoff run.
Yeah, even your captain leaves. One of your leadership committees is taken off of the – is taken in an expansion draft, one of your top goal scorers in the last 3 years. Colin Wilson is traded for a draft pick, and one of your top defensemen is out for half the season, and there's no spot for anybody?
Right.
Like, that doesn't make any sense. So, but I think it's a great point that the preseason, and it's a double-edged sword, because you said without the benefit of the outcomes not counting, meaning we were finding out about these guys in what should have been preseason moments that don't count, But the outcomes were obviously incredibly substantial. But there's a double-edged sword to that. The other side of that is the positive side of the sword, which is they were thrown out there in the most critical of all situations and excelled and answered questions and showed us that they were capable of performing on that big spotlight. But I think you're totally right. I think Goudreau and Auberg, specifically those two, would be big names at this stage right now. We'd be going, what are their roles? Well, where are they going to play? Are they third-line wingers? Are they fourth-line wingers? Can they score? Can they be second-line players? We sort of know all of that now, and we don't need to worry about those two guys in the preseason. Now we're talking about Alexander Carrier and Vladislav Kamenev, guys that probably won't make the roster. We're wondering if they're good enough to make the team. It's almost like we've gone down a notch on the roster because it's so deep now that we're not worried about it.
Well, and if you go back to February, March, and I'm saying, hey, Freddie Goudreau, most of you are not thinking of you don't even know who that is.
Hasn't scored a goal yet in his entire career.
And so then we're looking at it saying, no matter what is done in the preseason, we could come in outraged after the preseason, say they've got to find a spot for Freddie Goudreau, and people would roll their eyes. Now, after the Stanley Cup Final, the concept that Freddie Goudreau may not be up
is
here
is offensive.
I mean, yeah, no, people are like, what? No. Do you just stop that talk right now? I mean, that's how far you come because those games meant so much. And because the way those guys played in that moment. So when you've seen somebody be big in their biggest moments, it really ingrains them in the minds of the fan base, in the minds of the organization, in the minds of the team.
Now, that doesn't change the fact that those are still the names that I'm most interested to see, for example, today during the doubleheader or early in the season or whatever. Those are still the most interesting names because what happened last year is at the beginning, Austin Watson and Kevin Fiala are two that are sort of in that in-between world where last year, they didn't start the whole season. They weren't up on the roster at the start of the year. We sort of learned who they were throughout the course of the year, and obviously the Fiala injury notwithstanding. Watson had a great postseason as well. Those two guys feel like they're stepping into bigger roles, but we feel more proven about them. So I still think Auberg and Goudreau have a lot to prove over an 82-game season. So there's still the young players, especially on offense, where you lose James Neal, Mike Fisher, and Colin Wilson. We're not worried about the defense. We're not worried about the goaltending. It's about scoring goals is the only real question for this team moving into the season. So it is still about those young players. Who is it out of that group that's going to step up and be this year's Victor Arvidsson or whatever? And, I mean, Kevin Fiala is the obvious answer. He looks like a guy that could be a 20-25 goal a season guy, and he could be playing on the second line with Nick Bonino and, who knows, maybe Scott Hartnell or Craig Smith or whoever's on that top line. Auberg may be on that top line. Yarncroak could be somewhere in the mix as well. You don't know where they're all going to play, but you do want to see those. I think those three, and maybe if you want to throw Austin Watson into the mix because I think there's another tier to his game, if you put Goudreau, Auberg, Fiala, and Watson and said, what are you getting out of those four, and there is a pretty positive level of offensive production from those guys, I'm going to tell you this team's in really good shape.
Speaking of really good shape, you're always in really good shape if you go down to the 2017 Nashville Whiskey Festival presented by Midtown Cork Dorks Wine, Spirits, and Beer. Festival's at the Omni Hotel. We love that place.
I love whiskey. I love festivals. What's not to love?
And I love the Omni. You put it all together, I love it all. That's obviously Saturday, October 14th from 6:30 to 10:30 p.m. For more info, you can visit NashvilleWhiskeyFestival.com. It's funny, you just mentioned some names in Yarncroak and Watson and Auberg. One thing that we have to keep in mind is that there's a presumed growth from the mid-major section of this roster into major because of James Neal.
The group of five section. Like MTSU and Memphis?
Yeah, the group of five section.
They're trying to join the Big 12?
Because James Neal is out in Vegas, you can't tell me that people aren't going to be just side-eyeing that production a little bit.
No, Kevin Fiala is the Houston of this conversation. Kevin Fiala is Houston, and the Big 12 sort of wants Kevin Fiala to be a Big 12 team. That is what Kevin, and I do think he is capable. That's the guy that I think is the answer to that question. Kevin Fiala has to be the guy that steps in and scores 23 goals a season and is on the second line and provides that next layer of scoring depth. And he's the guy who makes Nick Bonino better because of his talent, his raw playmaking ability. He is the guy, first-round pick. I mean, he's the guy that's got to step into that role that fills James Neal's void. That, to me, is – and frankly, Craig Smith rebounds. I think we all have to anticipate a regression or a progression to the mean from Craig Smith. He had too many good years under his belt in a row to not sort of be back at that level. So I think Kevin Fiala is the one name that you look at and go, that's the guy that needs to step in and be this year's Victor Arvidsson. Not 31 goals, but that guy needs to be in the 20 to 25 range from a scoring standpoint.
Well, part of what we need to see is the step up and the naming of a captain. That's going to happen in just a few hours. We'll get you updated on what we know and tell you our thoughts. We'll do all that next up. Braden and Fitz, ESPN 102.5 The Game.